You're listening to EPN, the e-podcast network.
This is Hope Katz-Gibbs with Incandescent Public Relations, your host for the Incandescent Radio Show, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. We're here today with Seth Goldman, co-founder and president and CEO of Honesty, the company he co-founded in 1998 with Professor Barry Nailbuff of the Yale School of Management, where Seth was a student. In the past 10 years, the company has thrived with a 66% annual compound growth rate, a statistic he attributes to the fact that consumers have shifted toward healthier and more sustainable diets. Then in 2008, the Coca-Cola company purchased a minority interest in Honest Tea, fueling further growth as Honest Tea becomes the first organic and fair trade brand to move into the world's largest beverage distribution system. A graduate of Harvard College and Yale School of Management, Seth holds an honorary doctorate of laws from American University, and in 2009, he was the recipient of Net Impact's Member Achievement Award. He's a Henry Crown Fellow of the Aspen Institute, and we are more than thrilled to be here at Honest Tea headquarters in Bethesda, Maryland. Thanks so much for being on the Incandescent Radio Show, Seth.
Hi, Hope. Welcome.
Thank you. We're here at your very cool headquarters, right in the heart of Bethesda. It's all full of tea and tea creations. You're an entrepreneur at heart, having started with lemonade stands and newspaper roots before going to Harvard and Yale. And then you created a nonprofit organization, and you nearly pursued a prize-winning biotechnology idea before you started Honest Tea in your kitchen in 98. Tell us a little bit more about your background and why you decided to get into the tea business.
Well, I've always had a creative streak, and I've always had an entrepreneurial streak. And I've also, I think the third streak I've had is always believed, you know, in pursuing what I care about. And so for me, Honest Tea has really been a way to fuse all of those things to sort of think about what are the issues, and for me, you know, the issues that I care about around health, around environment and sustainability, and then around economic opportunity. And so thinking about taking all those issues and then how do you create something that allows me to feel like I'm taking action on those issues every day. And it could have been a nonprofit, it could have been a government entity or something like that, but Honest Tea really puts it all together for me and is a way to sell a product that's, we think, healthy and tastes great, but also support organic agriculture and then, you know, provide community wealth in communities that really lack access to it around the world.
So why tea?
Turns out that tea is the world's second most popular beverage, second to water. And that most tea is grown in some of the poorest parts of the world, India, China, rural areas where there's, by definition, a lot of land. And also, by definition, you know, very, you know, poor people who are not making what we think of as a livable wage. And so when we can be supporting organic agriculture, which is, works on a more premium scale, we can provide wages to these communities that really help create wealth and transform them. So that's the impact on the ground. But for the consumer, tea is also an incredibly healthy product. It can be, it has antioxidants in it, which people associate with whether it's fighting cancer or a lot of other healthy conditions in the body, or as well as just hydration. But the other thing about tea is that it can be enjoyed for just calories a bottle. It doesn't take tons of sugar to make tea taste great and certainly to deliver the function. And then, of course, the other thing is that it's an affordable luxury. So unlike wine, for example, if you wanted to have some of the world's highest quality wine, you'd be spending hundreds of dollars a bottle, not something everyone can afford. And yet we're able to provide tea that's easily within the top 10% of quality in the world, meaning it's organic, it's picked from some of the highest quality gardens, and yet it's still only pennies a bottle for the ingredient and making that, you know, accessible to consumers, a price point they can afford.
Great. So did you do a lot of market research before you started this?
Not enough, probably. You know, I think for us, my co-founder and I recognized that all the drinks on the market were just so sweet. And we felt like there should be a drink out there without tons of sugar. So that the market research really started with what we were personally missing. And then, you know, we didn't do any big focus groups or anything. We did do a few tastings, and what we heard from people was that they just didn't feel like there were drinks on the market that appealed to them. There were a lot of drinks out there. Obviously, the shelves are full, but there wasn't anything with just enough flavor to taste good.
Right. You know, that's how the Republic of Tea started ages ago, 20-plus years ago. I read the Republic of Tea when they first mm-hmm. founded. Have you read that book?
Yeah, sure. I know the people who started it.
Yeah, that'll be our book of the month to accompany this. And he went through trials and tribulations, not really knowing where to go or what mm-hmm. to do until he finally got into the zen of it, mm-hmm. as he describes it. Hmm. So has that been your experience that you've sort of fumbled through? But
well, we definitely evolved as we've grown. So our original production runs were very challenging, and we always had sort of an inch of sediment on the bottom of the bottle. And in the beginning, I would say our teas weren't sweet enough to appeal to a wide enough audience. And so we made the teas slightly sweeter, and they're still much less sweet than what's out there. But we found that, you know, sort of 30 calories is probably the ideal place to be, where it's sweet enough for consumers and yet also significantly less sweet than what else is on the market.
Right. So you like this tea. This is your favorite drink?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, I was thirsty and felt like this. I wanted to create a drink that I could enjoy every day.
What are you drinking today?
Today I'm having a Tulsi, which is a relatively new product. Tulsi is actually an herbal tea. It's a basil leaf. In India, it's called holy basil. And so it's a relatively new ingredient to the American palate, and one we're really excited to help increase the awareness of for people.
And these teas have herbal medicinal properties to them. Is that right?
Sure, every tea has polyphenols and antioxidants in them, and it just different ingredients will have different functional benefits.
And I'm drinking the lemonade, the zero calorie lemonade, the MST aid. So you've diversified a little bit from tea?
Yeah, you know, when we started, we always thought of ourselves as a tea company, and we thought the most important part of our name was Honest Tea, with the word emphasis on the tea. And as we grew, we realized that the most important brand connected to it is the word honest. And that's not just about tea, that's about healthy, organic, authentic taste. And so that enabled us to create Honest Aid. And from there, we then thought about taking that same Honest Aid taste profile and putting that in a kid's drink, which we have Honest Kids and the pouches. So we've been expanding the Honest platform as we've grown.
And this is actually our Honesty issue that where you're starring is our Entrepreneur of the Month.
Oh, great.
And
so appropriate.
I think so. And we want to talk about, from all of our 20 columnists are going to be writing about what honesty means from their business perspective and mm-hmm. from their different industries. So mm-hmm. talk a little bit about honesty in business and where it's going, where it's been, where it is.
Well, I think there are a few things. So first of all, we take that very seriously at our company. And I think one of the ways that you can really make sure what you're doing is honest is to under promise. You know, that the challenge we saw as we got into the beverage business was we heard so much distrust of beverage companies. People thought they were always over promising and they were going to cure cancer and lower your calories. I mean, there were drinks actually saying they were going to lower your calories, which I don't see how a beverage actually does that. So people, you know, I think justifiably started to have distrust of beverages. And that was a broader phenomenon going on in corporate America. Companies would literally say one thing and it would be something else. So the first thing is to do what you say. The second one is to underpromise what you say you're going to do so that, you know, you can hopefully exceed expectations. So we never talk about ourselves as a socially responsible company. We say we have a commitment to social responsibility, and we talk about ourselves being a mission-driven company, which means our commitment to health and sustainability and economic opportunity really drive the way we think about our products, the way we think about our marketing. But we do our best to not put ourselves on a pedestal. And so we just released our mission report, which is our annual report of how we're doing our efforts toward our mission, and we really make sure that it's not a cheerleading document. It shouldn't be. That the point isn't to pat yourself on the back. It's sort of to set the bar higher and say, here's what we need to do in the next year. Here's where we haven't quite achieved what we'd hope to achieve. Here's where, you know, we recognize, even though we've made, you know, a lot of progress and are probably further along than a lot of companies, here's where we can do better.
Two questions. One, where are you not where you want to be? Where do you want to
Well, I mean, certainly the biggest environmental impact we have as a company is that we sell tons of single-serve containers. Now, our goal as a business is to sell even more. And yet we recognize that environmentally, the more of those containers we put out that are not recycled, then that's contributing to the waste stream. And so we have a few initiatives. First of all, we're trying to increase the national rates of recycling, and we've taken a lot of action both locally and nationally on that. And then the other one is to look at the actual bottle itself. So what can we do to lightweight the bottle, to make it lighter so it is less waste? Then what can we do to make the material in the bottle more sustainable? So we can't totally change consumer behavior. And if we said, you know, our goal is to sell no bottles, then we'd be out of business. So we try to think about how can we live in that contradiction? How can we be a business committed to sustainability, but also committed to growth? And so I would say it's an ongoing process. And we certainly haven't solved the challenge, but we're engaged in it. And I think ultimately that's what consumers, when you talk about honesty, consumers want to understand you're willing to have a real discussion, not a glossy discussion that sort of doesn't really recognize where you are. I think going back to your question just about honesty and more broadly, they also look for transparency. So if you have problems or if you do things wrong or if you falter, you want to be honest about it. We had an initiative earlier this year where we were very proud. We brought recycling bike racks to Bethesda, made of recycled drink pouches. We were so excited about it, and it was a big ribbon cutting. And then we realized that the bike racks didn't fit the local code, and so we ended up with these bike racks that we couldn't place. I was like, well, we missed a step here. You know, the community, our partner, said it was fine. Then we got them here, and we realized. So we it's taken a lot longer to place the racks. We managed to place them on private, you know, whether it was a school or a restaurant or a cinema. But we couldn't get them on the streets the way we had hoped. And that was just a case where our desire to do it the right way was not sort of balanced by, the reality on the ground.
Yeah. It's like in Paris. Is that your vision? Is that there'll be bike racks everywhere?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. We're looking to have bikes, certainly more than they are in Bethesda. It's a very bike-friendly place, and it's a lot of traffic, car traffic, so let's get more bikes here.
That's a great idea. So the second part of that question was, you don't see a lot of corporations taking on that philosophy, but increasingly we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. I mean, and that's happening. It just takes time, and part of it is a recognition on their part of the change landscape. Part of it is them seeing other companies, and we think we strive to be a model that where it works. So when we can be open and honest with our consumers and be rewarded, with growth, then I think it helps it make it more compelling for other companies.
And that's pretty much the plight of the social entrepreneur, which I'm not sure if you fall quite fully into that, but quite a bit. In this issue of the magazine in November, Ashoka's Bill Drayton is our entrepreneur of the month. And mm-hmm. he's talking about the power of empathy and how if people are not change makers and they don't embrace this idea that they have to get with the future, that they'll fail, and they'll fail anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, irregardless what the consumer wants, especially what the millennials want, because they're changing the landscape themselves.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's exciting. So when we had interviewed Muhammad Yunus, when he came out with his book on mm-hmm. social business, he was talking with Dannon about creating edible cups.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about, I don't know that you can make an edible container for tea.
Our first step has been to work on a bottle made of plant-based material. So right now our plastic bottle is made of a petroleum-based resin, and that's obviously not a renewable resource. So we are working to increase the recycled content, but we're also working, and our partners at Coca-Cola have a plant-based resin that they've developed. And so our goal is to get into that and then obviously to increase the recycling rate, and that'll be a significant improvement. Because we have to fill our product at 190 degrees, it's unlikely we're going to be able to find an edible bottle. And then what's funny, there's been some initiatives out there with these compostable bottles or biodegradable bottles, and I think those are actually the right intent but the wrong solution. So the problem with those is that when you make a bottle, you're putting energy into it. The last thing you want to do is take that energy and bury it in the ground. What you really want to do is recapture that energy and reuse it and reuse it again and again. So by taking energy and then burying it, you're literally, just getting rid of the energy that's already been expended.
That's an interesting perspective. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about your founding partner, Barry Nelboff, who is your professor.
Yeah, so Barry is still a professor at the Yale School of Management. Very creative guy and very untraditional thinker, but very strategic. And what's been really fun is that this past year, Barry and I have been finishing up a book that will be released in 2013 about the story of Honest Tea. And so it's been really fun to go collaborate with him again. And in fact, I think in keeping with our partnership, we've always sort of found unconventional ideas to collaborate on. And so the book about Honest Tea is actually a comic book. It'll be a Random House Business book, but it'll be told in comic book form.
That's great, so, like Dan Pink's book on Johnny Bunko.
Similar, yeah. but I think a little even more visual in the sense that we're going to illustrate parts of how the business works, how the bottling line works, capturing some of the scenes from the tea gardens, and even illustrating the economic theories behind the business. You know, because Barry's, as I said, is still a professor, so some scenes from his classroom where we're able to. Highlight even how a marginal utility curve works and things like that you don't necessarily think of when you're building a business, but are actually the underlying theory behind the business.
And how wonderfully educational for students and all of us out there. Well, you'll have to send us a copy so we can write about it
absolutely.
In the upcoming issue. That's excellent. You work very internationally with these suppliers in India, South Africa, and Argentina. Tell us a little bit of how that works and creating this global network.
Well, as I said, tea is the world's second most popular beverage. So almost every culture in the world is growing some kind of herb that they brew. And so as a result, we are sourcing from a lot of different countries. And what we do is because we've committed to organics and to fair trade, it's a pretty clear standard. So we won't source from everywhere. We can't. When we let people know this is what we're interested in. And what we've seen as we've gone out to these gardens is that more and more gardens are becoming organic and fair trade. So that's, I think, for us, very gratifying to know that the fact that we're growing is really helping fuel change in other gardens around the world, you know, that we haven't even seen. So, but some of the partnerships we've seen, and I was in India earlier this year, just really exciting to see. I mean, some of the schools that I visited that are, you know, in the tea, the villages where the tea is grown are the kind of schools that people from outside the tea garden try to get their kids into because the quality of the education is so good. And this is in part due to the fact that there's fair trade subsidies coming in to support these schools, provide extra resources. So it's really has the potential to transform these communities. And what's surprising is that in one of the schools I visited earlier this year, I asked a classroom of kids, you know, how many of you, what do you want to do? And they were talking about some of them wanted to go work in the city and be engineers. I said, how many of you want to stay here in the garden? And no hands went up. And what it is they're sort of becoming awakened to the economic opportunities beyond rural work. And on the one hand, that's exciting for them. But if you think about it as a global challenge, you've got all these people in rural areas who want to go to the cities. And so, number one, as someone who buys tea, who's going to be picking the tea leaves is a question. And then number two, how do the cities handle all that growth? How do these communities provide enough jobs and supply? And then just infrastructure-wise, how can you support that kind of influx of people? So that's a challenge that's still decades away, but it is, I think, a real one.
Yeah, well, the United States experienced that too in different periods. So I think agriculture has always been an interesting challenge.
Yeah.
Success.
Yeah.
Kids not wanting to stay on the farm.
Yeah.
In addition to being named the Better World Shopping Guide's 10 Best Companies on the Planet, which must have been quite an exciting moment, you're listed in Planet Green's top 7 green corporations back in 2010, and Huffington Post ranked Honest Tea as the leading 8 revolutionary socially responsible company. So obviously, people are picking up on your message. It's clearly a value for you. And then in 2008, you co-founded Bethesda Green. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
So we've had this commitment to supporting sustainability around the globe. And then as we started to feel like our company was going to be around, I mean, you know, the first 10 years were awfully tenuous. We just didn't make sure we could keep the lights on. We said, okay, then we're going to be able to keep the lights on and we're supporting communities around the world. What can we do to really support our more direct local community where we live and work? And so, we started finding ourselves collaborating with a lot of the different local companies, the first thing we did is Honest Tea was doing a bike promotion. And we were buying a bunch of bikes. We bought 500 bikes to give out in retail stores. And then I said, well, we should buy a bike for every employee, which we did. And then I went to some of the other employers and said, you know, we're making this big purchase of bikes. We're going to get a great price on the bikes. If you want to join in and you'll just pay at our cost, you're welcome to do that and buy the bikes for your employees. And a few other companies joined us and did that. And then I said, wow, that was easy and fun and made sense. What else could we, how else could we build that? And so I thought about, we wanted to, in downtown Bethesda, as I talked about, we have this commitment to recycling, but there's no street-side recycling in Bethesda. And so I went to Coca-Cola, who at the time was investing in us. I said, you know, we really want to create a model of local sustainability here. Can we get you to invest in recycling bins that, with us? And so Coca-Cola wrote a check to help buy recycling bins in downtown Bethesda, which we helped implement. And we got other local companies and families to co-sponsor the bins. And we brought in 35 recycling bins. And that actually was what led to street-side recycling throughout downtown Bethesda.
Wow.
And then I talked to our landlord. We had just moved into our new building. And our landlord, who was one of the companies that bought the bikes, I said, you know, you've got all these restaurants down here. They're producing all this grease. And what's going on is that the grease gets picked up. It can't be put down the drain. And it's being brought to a company that was using it for animal food, dog food.
Oh.
And I said, you can make that into biodiesel. And so they switched their contract, the people who pick it up. And it's now there's thousands of gallons of biodiesel being produced in downtown Bethesda. It's like our own little OPEC here. And then from there, we so it's all kind of organic how it's grown. We had the local bank, at the time was Chevy Chase Bank, had not yet kind of chipped in on the project. I said, well, we'd love to have you guys committed to this, what we call Bethesda Green. And I hadn't realized at the time they were in the process of getting bought by Capital One, but I said, what can you do? And they said, well, we can't write a check, but we do have some office space above one of our branches. We could provide that as office space for the executive director. And I visited the office space. In fact, Honest Tea had looked at that office space. I said, boy, there's so much office space. Why don't we set it up as a green business incubator? And so, it's still the case that over on Cordell and Woodmont above the Capital One branch, we have it's about 3,500 square feet of office space that is a green business incubator for 14 different environmentally conscious entrepreneurs launching businesses. And so it's really been fun to see, you know, what started with an idea around green collaboration just expand. And Bethesda Green has its own executive director now, and I'm still on the board, but it's clearly grown. It started from a vision that I had, but it's really grown beyond that. And we had collaboration with the local officials. We had one of the leading members of the county council, you know, who was responsible for helping to make sure we could get the recycling. It wasn't just me. It was, you know, we took other businesses. It took public officials. And we really needed to make sure that we had sort of the whole team together to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So that's your nonprofit?
Yeah, it's called Bethesda Green.
Right. That's great. Well, we're going to have to do a nonprofit column.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be worth visiting there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You were also appointed by Mayor Martin O'Malley to the Maryland Economic Development Commission. How have you been able to initiate change in that role?
One of the things that the governor had asked me to think about was, what can we do to make Maryland more friendly and hospitable to entrepreneurs? Because he recognized, like a lot of government entities are recognizing, that the entrepreneurial companies, the small businesses, are the ones that are really creating a lot of the new jobs, a lot of the new private sector jobs. And so I put together a series of recommendations for the commission, and it was a variety of things, some of which were thinking about how you can just highlight and showcase entrepreneurs more. So they've had a bus that's gone around to highlight sort of the startup companies throughout the state. They've had a statewide competition. And then last week I was able to have the governor give an introductory remarks at Net Impact, which is a national nonprofit that they had their 20th annual conference in Baltimore. And it was great to have Governor O'Malley there to both see what the organization is doing. And then for those 3,000 MBA and college students who are interested in socially responsible business, understand that Maryland is a place that welcomes their ideas and their talents and you know, obviously the potential for them to launch a business here.
Excellent. So do you think that that will continue to grow?
I hope so. And it was excited to see that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce did just recently rank Maryland as number one in terms of entrepreneurship and innovation. So that's really that's a very, very positive thing to see.
Yeah, that's great. I think more and more cities will be encouraging this, don't you?
They need to because the, you know, obviously the public sector is contracting. We don't expect new jobs to come from there. And a lot of large corporations are trying to do more with less. And so I think as an economy, the growth is going to be coming from small innovations that can really become bigger.
Yeah. So you grew up outside of Boston, mm-hmm. and you said that you went before our chat. You said that you knew our friend Bert Jacobs, who owns the Life is Good company. We had the opportunity to interview Bert and his brother John in September of 2011, mm-hmm. my son and I, actually. So companies like you guys are really changing the landscape. You're tapping into this millennial population of wanting to do good while doing well. So tell us a little bit more about what you see coming in just in terms of the future of business, entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So I think what's going on in a much bigger way is that large corporations are understanding that the whole landscape is shifting. Consumers are thinking differently about what they're looking for from products and from companies. And I also think that a lot of the large companies recognize they are unlikely to be the ones bringing those innovations to the marketplace. And so what we've seen, you know, certainly with our partnership with Coca-Cola, you know, it was clear Coca-Cola wouldn't have created a brand like Honesty just because we started in a very small niche. We started with a very different approach to our ingredients, even to our consumers. And so when we started to gain traction, they recognized this was a great opportunity for them to be part of something. And so now we are part of Coca-Cola. But the future, as you think about what Coca-Cola is going to be very different than what it was 20 years ago. 20 years from now, Coke will be very different than it was 20 years ago. I think 20 years ago, I think they just had brought out Diet Coke. I mean, it was, you know, it was a very different type of company. And so now when we think about where Coke is headed, it will be, you know, a lot more diversified, different brands, different products, and certainly different portfolio and a different approach. So in my view, this is one of the ways change happens is when a larger corporation can take on not just the products, but the values of some of the other companies that it acquires. And so you're seeing that in other companies as well. And I think that's an exciting way to think about how large corporations will be changing.
That's amazing. And it makes perfect sense. How did you get involved with Coke? That must have, you started in your kitchen.
So we were very focused on just surviving in the natural foods world for the first 5 years. And then we started to get some expansion beyond natural foods into some of the grocery stores around the country and some restaurants and other chains. And Coke developed a part of their organization called Venturing and Emerging Brands. And what they wanted to do was invest in companies that they thought would be the big brands of the future. And so they reached out to us and asked if we were open to a discussion about how we might work together. And at the time, Honest Tea was raising money. We said, well, yeah, we're going to be raising some money to grow. So if you want to invest as a minority investor, we'd welcome that. And they did invest and we continued to grow. And we had a good working relationship. We after they bought the company, we've continued to have a good working relationship.
So they invested 40%?
Mm-hmm. In 2008.
And now
they own the rest of the company.
So when was that?
In 2011.
Why did you make that choice?
So there were a few things. Number one, when they invested in 2008, they wanted to have what we called a path to control. And by the time we got to 2011, where they said they wanted to buy the rest of the company, it was clear the growth we were seeing was what we had hoped for. You know, we in 2008 were doing well in natural foods. We were in about 15,000 stores around the country, but we weren't getting beyond that. At least not quickly. And today we're in over 100,000 stores. So we've clearly reached a different level of penetration to the American population. And that's really what the goal when we started the brand, you know, 15 years ago was to create something that would be meaningful, could really have an impact. And so there's that balance. Do you want to be a model for change or a driver for change? And I certainly want this to be a driver of change. I don't want to model it so somebody else can copy it and do it, you know, in a half-ass way. So for me, this is the next step in our expansion, and we've seen the growth, and we, you know, now we start going over our annual plans, and it's clear honesty is, you know, a core part of Coca-Cola's portfolio.
So was it hard to let go?
Well, I haven't let go.
You're still the CEO.
So I guess you could say it was hard because I haven't let go. I'm still running the company out of Bethesda. We have really the same core team in place. We have most of the same employees. And certainly the product line is the same.
Our friend Kathleen Tooley, who runs the Box Kids program, she has started a nonprofit for kids based on research and her own experience, knowing that kids, it actually, it makes you smarter to exercise. Dr. Ratner at Harvard discovered this, and that she's on their board. And Reebok picked up on the idea. Mm. And she struggled with, should she go into Reebok or keep building it on her own? Mm-hmm. And she ultimately decided to pick it up, let Reebok pick it up.
Yeah.
And it's expanded exponentially because of that influence.
Yeah.
And that apparently has been your experience as well.
Yeah. Certainly when you look at our what we always judge how we're doing is by our impact and our mission. So certainly in terms of bottles sold, that's grown dramatically. In terms of organic ingredients we're buying, that's grown dramatically. In terms of fair trade premiums we're returning to the gardens, those have grown dramatically. So, I think from all the standards that are important to us, those have all grown. So, and we see continued growth ahead.
And do you feel like you have some influence over Coke's choices?
We certainly have influence over what Honest Tea does. I think that our success at Honest Tea helps it make an impact on the rest of Coca-Cola. Look, the Coca-Cola company as a whole is doing quite well. So, I think our goal is to continue to grow as part of the Coca-Cola company. It is a case where there's no question there's only so much room on the trucks and in the warehouses. So the fact that we're part of that portfolio means that there's change going on. But, our goal isn't to sort of not have them grow. Our goal is to grow along with them.
Do you sell it internationally?
We're just starting to. We'll have some international distribution of Honest Tea in the coming year. We do a little bit now, but not really of any significant scale.
Which countries?
We're sold in Korea. And in some other, Singapore, places like that, in the United Arab Emirates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Europe at all?
Not in Europe. We've had a challenge because Coca-Cola, until recently, has only been able to sell Nest Tea in Europe. So that's the partnership that made it. So we couldn't.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So a lot of entrepreneurs would like to follow in your footsteps and start in their kitchen. Mm-hmm. And, that's the fantasy, the dream. So do you have a couple of tips for entrepreneurs on how to go about doing that? And also talk a little bit about tips for being honest.
Yeah. Well, certainly, I think the key thing to start with is how can you offer something that's different than what's on the market? So if I were saying I want to launch a tea and it's, call it Seth's Tea, and it's just like all the other bottled teas in the market, it's not going to work because there's already a lot of those teas on the market, and just because it's called Seth's Tea doesn't mean it's going to work. So it has to be meaningfully differentiated from what is on the market. So that's a core thing I think, unfortunately, a lot of people just ignore. Something's exciting to them, they're passionate about it, but it doesn't mean there's no meaningful difference for the consumer, or in this case, or the buyer of a grocery store would say, well, why do I need this? I've got thousands of options. So that's certainly an important place to start with. I think the other thing is you really need to make sure it's something you're personally excited about. So for me, Honest Tea was never just about selling a drink. It was really about, as I've talked about, changing the diet, thinking about agriculture, thinking about economic opportunity. And so that's something I can get excited about every day. Business is so challenging that if you only get excited about sort of the financial side of it, there'll be enough setbacks that won't be enough to keep you going. So you really have to feel like you're doing something you believe in every day.
Mm, beautiful. So how do you stay honest?
I think the way to stay honest is to stay close to the consumer, to make sure you're in close to the ingredients, continue to remind yourself why you're doing what you're doing and why it's meaningful to people. So I still see all the emails we get from all of our consumers. I don't answer all of them anymore, but I do see them all. I still try to get out to the communities we source from on a regular basis so I can feel like I understand what our impact is in these communities. And then I'd say, you know, our employees are even closer. So make sure I stay connected to our employees. So I understand what's going on in the stores, what consumers are saying about our product. And so never get, you know, so behind a desk or so behind a spreadsheet that you don't really understand how it all ties together.
And has your core values shifted at all as you've gotten more successful?
I don't think so. You don't have to, I mean, it's probably not a fair question to ask me, but I'd like to think that certainly my passion for what we're doing is as strong as it's been. My belief about the urgency is in some ways gotten, you know, even more urgent because we think if we see what's going on with our environment. And I think, no, so I don't feel like I've, you know, had any real change there.
What's the biggest thing you've learned that surprised you?
For Building Honest Tea, the biggest challenge I had not anticipated was distribution. So we have our business plan on our website. It's our original business plan. And it's a nicely written plan with some nice thoughts around the marketing of the brand. But it has no real recognition that in order to get a product to market, you really have to rely on a whole distribution network to get it there. And you know, to be fair, we were starting out. We had no experience in the beverage business, so I don't blame us for not anticipating that. But on the other hand, it's kind of laughable. You have a beverage company with a business plan, but no real understanding that it was going to take distribution to get there. So clearly, that has been something that my experience has helped me appreciate the value of, and obviously why the Coca-Cola relationship is so valuable for us.
So would that be a tip as well?
Well, you got to think about how you get your product to consumers. There's no question. And some people, you know, if you can be delivered online, that's a different distribution mechanism, but you can't lose sight of that because that's whatever it is, otherwise it's just a thought exercise.
Exactly. And that's why we're able to get so much attention around the magazine because we're not paying to distribute it. We're just distributing it the way people are absorbing information these days. Yeah. So picking up on those trends, I think, is critical, obviously, for any business. All right, last question, personal note. You and your wife and three boys live near headquarters here in a greenhouse, an eco-friendly house.
Yeah.
How old are your kids? Tell us a little bit about your house, and are they going to follow in your footsteps?
Well, so I have three boys. They're all, two of them are in college now. One is in high school, and they are, I hope they follow my footsteps in the sense that they do something they're passionate about. I think one of them is definitely two of them. They're all very environmentally aware and focused and certainly conscientious in the way they act. I don't personally feel they have a need to work in the beverage business, but I do certainly hope they do work that they believe in, that they can get excited about, that they can really live not just sort of 9 to 5, but you know, every day.
That's beautiful. What's your dream for the future? Do you have anything you haven't accomplished yet?
Honest Tea is still, we've still got a long way to go. I mean, it's funny because some people say, oh, I see your product everywhere. And we have grown our distribution a lot, but I see all the places it's not. You know, when we think about the health trends in this country, still aren't going in the right direction. So we really need to get this product out. I'm thinking, you know, we're in conversation now with national restaurant chains. We need to increase not just our presence, but our sales. So it's really a very, we need to become much more, I don't say mainstream, but much more of an everyday item for people. That's something there's a long way to go. You know, we are, just still a very, very small percentage of what's sold in beverages in the United States, not just within Coca-Cola. And so there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, maybe you can be in Starbucks.
Well, I think they've got their own
tea.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fascinating topic and a fascinating company, and we wish you only the best with it. To all of our listeners, we thank you for spending your time with us. This has been Hope Katz Gibbs with Incandescent Public Relations, your host for the Incandescent Radio Show, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network.
This is the ePodcast Network.